Well, good afternoon, everybody. It is Rich Certainleap, Ken Laird, three-time Super Bowl champion Ted Johnson right here on a World Cup launch day. And you know what, gentlemen? First of all, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
What's up, buddy?
I got my second soccer kit on, second day in a row.
You've gotten kit two days in a row.
My Revs jersey. Thank you.
How many jerseys we got?
Three. Think? 3 years in a row. They sent one to me. Breaking them out. I'm a shill. I'm nothing if not a craft quasi-employee.
No doubt. No doubt.
Man, that is that silky, smooth material that you got.
That's
there. So the nipples feel nice and smooth
don't
on
I,
there.
Don't I look like a baller?
Absolutely. You know what? Speaking of the World Cup, gentlemen, yesterday I came on the air and I said that I wasn't feeling it at all. Like, it seems like there's all this talk about how, you know, it's going to be chaos and everything downtown, and I just wasn't seeing it. I wasn't feeling it. That all ended yesterday.
Ooh, we got action.
I mean, it went from 0 to 60. So I had to go down towards the Prudential area yesterday, and I was walking down, I think it was Boylston Street, and I kid you not, it was Scottish accents everywhere.
Great.
The Tartan Army, which is the Scottish group of super fans, they are everywhere right now. I saw kilts out on the streets. On top of that, there was a traffic jam that was backed up on Boylston, and apparently it led right to where the Four Seasons is. You know, the one that's right off the Common?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because there was a group of, the way that they said on the news, that there was 150 to 200 people who were camped outside of the hotel just to get a look at Mbappe, the famous French, he plays for FC Barcelona, right? But he's on the French team that's going to be playing here.
I think so.
But, dude, I don't know. Once again, I'm not a huge soccer fan except for the World Cup. Like, when the World Cup comes around...
Real Madrid.
It's the best. Oh, is it Real Madrid? Okay. But he's one of the most famous athletes in the world, would you probably say? I bet his Twitter followers or ex-followers are probably or Instagram in the tens of millions. But there were just people camped out. There was news cameras just to take a look at this guy. And I guess he was good enough to go out there and actually sign autographs.
131 million Instagram followers.
He's one of the most famous people in the world.
That's incredible.
Oh, wow.
It's funny. It's like these F1 drivers and soccer players from overseas. I mean, you think Tom Brady's famous?
Tom Brady has 15 million.
Right. You think LeBron James is famous?
130 million.
Yeah.
Dude, it's crazy what these guys make. Cristiano Ronaldo, he makes $300 million annually.
Yeah.
Playing soccer.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Whenever you look at that worldwide, who makes the most money, like of athletes, it's always like these soccer players and F1 guys.
Wow.
But he is backing up traffic over there in Boston.
Did you wait for an Mbappe autograph or nothing for the kids?
The only thing I've ever seen like that was when the friendly happened where Miami was in town. And Messi was staying at the Ritz-Carlton that was over off the Common. And there was across the street construction. And there were people hanging from the scaffolding. It might have been 300 people blocking the road just to see Messi come walk from the front door to about 10 feet into the bus that was taking them to the game. And sure enough, he walked out and walked right on the bus. There was not even a signature or anything like that. He wasn't signing autographs. It was just, I'm getting right on the bus. And for that, there were people who had been camped out for hours just to get a glimpse of him.
Mbappe, 12th in earnings this year, $95
million.
Behind Giannis at $99 million. Ooh. Kevin Durant, the only other.
Giannis made $99 million this year?
On-field, $54 million, and off-field, $45 million.
They're counting the endorsements.
Yes, they counted total earnings.
But he has $45 million in endorsements a year?
Yep.
Must be
that Kalshi money coming in.
Maybe shoe deal, maybe? I don't know. You know, something.
Cristiano Ronaldo won, $300 million.
$300 million.
Yeah.
Mbappe, third highest paid soccer player in the world.
Yep. Right. Yeah. Well, today is the day. It all starts. And then, matter of fact, we're going to have Cat Harvey from Scotland, who has traveled with this, the Tartan Army, they call them. A bunch of people who apparently are very proud that they drink a ton, and they're here to party, and there's kilts everywhere. They'll be on with us. Also, Tommy Curran will be joining us at 4 o'clock because we got Pat's camp going on, and it should be good to hear from him for a little bit. But you know what happened? Let's get to some sports happen, shall we, Stiz?
What just happened?
Sports happened.
And Sports Happen is brought to you by Jeffrey Glassman Injury Lawyers, Boston's go-to injury attorney for over 30 years. If you've been hurt in a car or work accident, you got to get Glassman. Call all sevens at 617-777-7777. We'll talk about the atrocity that happened at Madison Square Garden here in just a few. But first, rock bottom. Oh, you betcha, Stiz. Let's hear it.
So the Red Sox have made the wrong kind of history here today. 1-1 to Durbin, the pitch. Down and in. This is the first time since 1901 that the top three hitters in any lineup ever have struck out three times the first three times through.
125 years.
1901.
That's a lot of baseball.
Yep.
That's a lot of baseball. A
lot of baseball.
I love that line.
You know, yesterday around this time, we all went to therapy.
Yeah.
Our callers flooded the lines one by one, ripping this Red Sox team that now has them seated at 12 games under 500 with no hope in sight. In a season of awfulness, the Sox were at the peak of their awfulness yesterday. So that's why when Red Sox president Sam Kennedy called into Greg Hill's show this morning, the last one anyone wanted to hear was excuses.
Yeah, look, I think it's important here at the outset, Greg, just to acknowledge before we get into all that, just how embarrassing and unacceptable, maddening, frustrating, whatever words you want to use, the past 2.5 months have been. There's no way to sugarcoat it. It's been awful, especially when you consider the stated goal of building upon what happened last season. So I just, you know, before getting involved in terms of the day-to-day of the club, taking a step back, zooming out, it's been incredibly frustrating. And I just want to acknowledge that right at the outset. And it's on all of us. We have to get better. And I just wanted to say that.
Did you guys hear the interview this morning?
He preempted it.
Excellent.
Yeah, he did.
Boy, he diffused it.
He did.
Opening statement.
The
question was about something completely different.
It was about Crochet, I think.
Yeah, it was about injuries. And he goes, before we go anywhere, let me just say this. So I will give Sam Kennedy this. He has been tone deaf on many occasions this season. I mean, especially the old, well, I guess you're the doctor thing he muttered when he was questioned about the Roman Anthony injury. But he did understand the assignment this morning. He knew that there was no possible way he could, with this team, he could not come on this station and try to silver line any of it, what's going on right
Embarrassing.
Now.
Embarrassing.
Yeah, it was, and he didn't.
Keep going.
Some of his answers weren't the best, but at least he fell on the sword repeatedly and didn't fight back against accusations of organizational incompetence.
To your point, there's nothing from that interview that has made it worse.
Yep.
If rock bottom was yesterday, we didn't have a new low this morning.
Yep.
So he did a good job. He did a good job of answering in the manner in which he had to. Not that he gained any favor. I'm not sure they went up in any direction. But it is, I mean, I know you have a lot to get to in the interview. It is curious, the Crochet diagnosis, which he deflected there. He eventually got to it.
Yeah.
But for Crochet to tell Pete Abraham, we mentioned this at the end of yesterday's show, that it's a lot worse than we thought. And no idea when he might throw again.
Yeah.
Is another Roman Anthony. It's like Roman Anthony part two with the medical stuff.
Yeah.
And it's just confounding.
It's the downplaying of injuries, which if you're a player, obviously you despise anyone who makes it sound like you are either dogging it or it's not as bad as it actually is.
Can you understand why the team might do that, though? Why the team might exaggerate it or not tell the whole truth or be positive, you know, with some of these injuries?
Now, why do you think it is?
I think it's to sell tickets. I think it's to keep people engaged.
But their tickets are mostly pre-sold, right? I mean, how much walk-up do you need at Fenway? I mean, maybe like future tickets for the fall or next year or something like that?
Yeah.
I mean, you're not wrong. That's like the first thing you think about.
That's the first thing I think of is that they just want to keep people, you know, engaged, buying tickets, making plans to come see the Sox in the summer, that they don't want to give any bad news to discourage people from buying tickets. That's the only thing I can think of why they're doing this.
It's sunshine and roses. It's trying to make things seem like they're not as bad as they actually are. And that's why this morning with Sam Kennedy, at least either he was smart enough to figure it out or somebody got to him and said, the last thing you need to do this morning is paint any kind of rosy picture or any kind of hope. I want you to get up there. It's doom. It's gloom. It's as bad as you think it is.
Yeah.
And for that, I actually was like, okay, this is the first interview that I've heard a little bit of humility from Sam Kennedy.
We admit we have a problem.
Yes, exactly.
But that's huge. I don't know if I've ever heard that tone from Sam, like where he wanted to make sure that he told everybody how disappointed they are. Now, hey, words are nice. You know, actions, you know, we'll see. But
right.
for
if he,
them
if he
to,
followed it up with Theo Epstein is now involved in our front office, yeah. that would have been the next counterpunch.
Yeah.
Well, he ended up addressing it as well. They asked him about why he mischaracterized Roman Anthony's injury. Mm-hmm. And finally, we got this answer. Let's take a listen.
Well, it's listen, I need to own up to my mistake. I mean, I was unequivocal in my response to you regarding Roman and his situation. I missed that day at Harvard Medical School. You know, I shouldn't be sitting here talking about a sprain. You know, a sprain is a tear. And, you know, I was reading off of a report that identified the sprain. And anyway, listen, Roman is doing everything he can to get back and get better. Putting timetables on baseball injury is really, really hard. That's why we try not to do it. And then when we don't do that, it sounds evasive and like we're dodging it. So I apologize for my mistake there. I've communicated with Roman about that. That's all good. And what's important is he's doing the work to getting back. And in terms of Garrett, unfortunately he's dealing with a lat issue. Again, I'll stop there. If anything, I can learn from my mistakes in terms of putting timetables or getting into details. That's not my role, so I'm not going to do it. But I know it's killing him and killing Roman to not be out there. But hopefully, they'll be able to get back out there soon enough and help us get this thing back on track.
You know what I got out of that the most is when he said I communicated with Roman on that.
Right.
So it sounds like Roman was pissed.
Yeah.
Like that was a real conversation. Yeah, and you can tell the way he talked to Rob Bradford.
Oh, man. Well, you say, kind of just to be clear, I mean, you're basically talking to Sam Kennedy. Like, dude, when you talk about things that you don't know about, it makes me look like I'm not a tough guy. And that... Dude, I mean, to me, the whole Sam Kennedy was just an innocent mistake. He thought he didn't realize the semantics, but he learned his lesson the hard way. He will never, my guess is, ever talk about injuries again.
Yeah. But Dr. Hill and Dr. Kennedy here can discuss medical diagnoses together.
That's gone. Like, that was gone this morning. I mean, he sounds, that's the one thing about Sam Kennedy. He just comes across as so cocky and so condescending in these interviews, and this was the first time where he was just like, dude, it does me no good to do that because right now it's as bad as you think it is. And at least that's step one, isn't it? Is like having some sort of humility, but you got to back it up. You got to back it up with doing something. And he was asked about Craig Breslow because Craig Breslow is in the crosshairs. Everyone, I mean, all these articles being written about how he needs a translator.
Jackson has a sign ready for Fenway tomorrow. I'm Craig Breslow. Tell me, what do you think about my GM duties?
It's true. On top of that, it sounds like, there's rumors as to whether or not he's going to last. You know, I mean, I predicted that if they got swept by Tampa Bay and they ended up being, as far back as they were, that could be the end of Craig Breslow. It has not happened yet. But Sam Kennedy was asked about the future of Craig Breslow and also about our report about Buster Only saying that the ownership is now going over Craig Breslow's head, and his answers were pretty eye-opening. We're not going anywhere. We'll be back in 2 minutes with the answers to those questions right after this. It's 93.7 WEEI. Rich, Ken, two-time Super Bowl. Three-time. Jeez, I'm coming stealing one from you. Three-time Super Bowl champ, Jim Johnson. I'm getting all tripped up now because I've got World Cup fever on the brain. We're trying to find the channel over here.
You had Landon Donovan and Ian Dark on the screen. Doesn't that bring you back to 94 one of your... I mean, that's...
All the way back.
There you go.
Where's Ray Hudson? That's the guy I want. Ray Hudson is the all-time best sports commentator of any sport. Do you know what I'm talking about, Ray Hudson?
I don't.
All right. Stiz, do me a favor. For later on the show, just pull up Ray Hudson's Tom Cruise soccer call. That's it. Ray Hudson is, I believe he's Scottish. He's going to be watching this.
Okay.
Ray Hudson is, I'll let you hear the clips for yourself. He is hands down, without a question, my favorite sports commentator.
Better than Cooper Boardman?
Well, I mean, listen, they're not as good as Cooper Boardman. I mean, non-Syracuse grad
they're good.
Commentator. Do you have it? All right. Well, Stiz has got...
That man in the black shirt for Real Madrid, the little goalkeeper, Casillas, kept them in the game, kept them denying Varela and Maxi to keep the score level and keep the goals down. And that allowed Real Madrid's star players, likes of Reyes and Robinho, to come in. And that's why you're seeing those beautiful tears of a man whose heart is bursting. Iker Casillas. Will you stop talking about tennis players and stupid Hollywood actors, Phil? It's the gladiators out there, man. Not tennis players. Tom Cruise. Brick.
Oh, there's one line. The best line got cut off. Oh. He goes, Tom Cruise, if he smelt a sock of jock strap, he'd faint dead away.
He retired last year. Oh, no.
I can listen to that guy talk soccer all day.
He's the best. I've interviewed him once, and the craziest thing is that he is the biggest soccer guy. Worship. I mean, he obviously sounds phenomenal. That's not even the tip of the iceberg when it comes to how unbelievable this guy's calls are. But apparently most of those calls are done like in a closet. Like he's in Miami.
Oh yes.
He's watching it remote. It's like it's and he's COVID. Watching it in Miami. So nonetheless, the guy rules. All right. So Sam Kennedy this morning was on the Greg Hill show.
Smell a sock of jockstrap. He feared dead away.
That's right there. Tom Cruise. Give me a break. So he was asked about, as I said, it was this morning. They're finally accepting the fact that they're awful. Like, they are historically
are they
awful.
Accepting their...
You heard Sam Kennedy's opening statement.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, they know how bad it is. Now, there's a difference between knowing and doing something about it, but he was asked by Greg Hill this morning about the future of Craig Breslow, and here was the answer.
Look, I fully understand and appreciate questions regarding Craig Breslow and his job security and all that. But the issue of a change there, just to be clear, it's not even on the table. Craig, and he is working as hard as anybody in terms of getting things back on track. But again, words are hollow right now. And as bleak as things appear, I think it'd be ridiculous to say anything other than we're all feeling it. And, we're working to get us back on that trajectory that we really thought we were on coming into the end of last year and getting to the postseason and then having a stated goal of taking that next step in October. That was the goal. And here we are. It's 66 games in. We've played 40% of the season and, we're 12 games under 500 and last in the AL East. That's pretty much all we need to know. It's just not acceptable.
It's what's interesting is he talks about they thought that they had a better team to start this year than they ended with last year.
Yeah,
that's the terrifying part. And you read this. There's an article Alex Speer wrote.
Oh my God!
Yesterday, where he got basically other people from around the Major League Baseball, front office people to weigh in on what they thought is going on here with the Red Sox, and. It's amazing. He's one of the guys, one of the people he interviewed said, quote, "I'm still confused on the Red Sox roster construction and truthfully how they thought it would turn out any different than it has. The holes that were there at the start of the season are still there."
Yep, yep.
However, Keith did a good job pushing back on Bradfield with this. What did you think before the season began? Because they did win 89 games last year. They made a wild card series. Did you think they were this bad? Or
I didn't think they were this bad, but
think
I thought
they were definitely worse.
I thought they were an 85 win team, 80 maybe 81 win team.
Yeah,
I don't know how you looked at this and thought differently.
Definitely it was a better rotation. I mean, right? Because last year you had Crochet and everything else was kind of a question mark.
But Patriots always get hurt all the time. Like you dude, case in point, Crochet is gone. So to me, to rely on pitchers and not hitting
right.
to all season is fool's gold.
By the way, another great quote from that Alex Speer article. Once again, they interviewed a bunch of people. I think it was like representatives from other teams, scouts, and people around the league. And one of the quotes was, "I can't believe they're content going with so many AAA players, utility infielders at the bottom of the lineup." I mean, this is absurd. Lots of guys who satisfy the model but are role players being overexposed. This team is punchless.
Dude, it's crazy. I mean, Romy Gonzalez was the DH in the playoffs last year. Like, a role player. It's utility player. There's so many guys. I mean, dude, Connor Wong has been the DH nine times this year.
Now, I heard you playing a little of the Kevin Millar stuff from earlier in the week, and that is fascinating because do you respect Kevin Millar?
I do. I really respect him.
And he's like outside the bubble. Sometimes we get caught up in the minutia and we just rip the team, and they deserve it right now, no doubt. But when I hear him say what he said, don't give up yet. They just need a bat. Did it give you any pause, any smidgen of like, let's just hang on for a second?
It's insane. I don't know. It's kind of a long cut. Stiz, you have that?
I can give you the meat and potatoes.
Give me the meat and potatoes. This is Kevin Millar literally 3 days ago. Now, just
this
so you know.
Before the sweep.
He says, this is right. So this is before
the
sweep.
This is when they beat the Braves and Rich had him in the World Series.
But literally 3 days ago. So this is what Kevin Millar thought about the Red Sox literally just 3 days ago before this last sweep.
Yeah. They have to get a dude that hits.
They have to get a dude that hits, and that's it.
And he said they're not out of it. Don't blow it up.
You know what he says also in that? He goes, they have the starting pitching to be a World Series team. If I got to hear about how this pitching is going to pay off in the playoffs, dude, you can't even get to the playoffs to show how good of your pitching
and
is.
And their bullpen shot all the
Well, I have some bad news for Kevin Millar. Because Sam Kennedy addressed whether or not they were going to try to get a big bat. He's not going to like the answer. I think that this team has finally realized the season's over. Sam Kennedy with the most damning thing he said about this Boston Red Sox team, and we will play that next.
Baseball, Rich, baseball!
Oh, no, you got to put that awful... When he wrote that song about the Cubs, Dolan Terriers only a game. Oh, man, stop! I can't take it. By the way, we are in the Catches Law Injury Attorney Studio. No fee unless you win. It is Rich, Ken, three-time Super Bowl champion Ted Johnson, and Sam Kennedy was on this morning. I just want to wrap this up because, you know, you were talking about how Kevin Millar came on TV and was saying, all they need is one bat, right, Ted?
That's it, one bat.
Well, you know what? Maybe that ain't going to happen because he was asked about the report that came out last week that they were going to be taking a look for another bat and trying to, you know, what, like a right-handed hitter. Let's take a listen to see what he had to say about that.
Being aggressive in looking to adding a bat.
Yeah, it's a great question. With the passage of time, you have to sort of take an honest assessment and look and see sort of where you are. At the current moment, there are a lot of discussions going on in terms of improvement and how we get this thing back on track, looking at every single area of the roster and player personnel, and Brez and his team are doing that. But look, let's be honest, unless things change dramatically, we may have to pivot here from what our initial planning was. It wouldn't be responsible to do otherwise, but we're hearing mid-June, we need to see what happens over the next couple weeks, and then we'll reassess.
So you know what this team's going to be for the rest of the season?
It is going to be ass
for the rest of the season.
Last year, they entered the month of June, four games under .500, and then they went on a little streak. They won 10 out of the next 13. You do something like that, and then all of a sudden, AL like it is, you're back in it.
Pivot.
You're going to have to pivot.
Got easier competition coming up, I will say that. You got Texas in here. You got Toronto. You got Seattle, little nine-game streak.
I mean, they know that the season's over. Like, this was the season's over call, wasn't it? Like, I mean, when you hear Sam Kennedy come on here and just there's like, it's no hope. Like, he came straight out and was like, no. No help is coming. This is as bad as it is. We're not going to do anything to fix it right now, and we sure as hell aren't going to go out and buy and try to find somebody.
Which, nor they should. But, however, do you believe that Breslow is safe? Because I find that very difficult to believe. I know they've said it now twice this week. Two votes of confidence, one on the Globe and one here this morning on Greg Hill's show. But they cannot, especially when they start hearing the Breslow chants this weekend. They cannot be 100% committed to this
guy. And what's he going to say? Like,
Theo already turned on him in the Globe and said he's unhappy with him. That's a member of ownership. So they cannot be telling the truth there, Ted.
I see. I think they're leaning into it so hard that it would be a bad look if they did fire him at this point.
But in a month or 2 months, you're going to let Breslow make your trade deadline sales for you?
But doesn't say, you know what? He's going to be there to answer the phone and hang up the phone. And it's going to be the owners that's going to be. Dude,
but why? What's the point of that? Do you love the guy so much that you just want to prop him up and make him like a figurehead?
I think they're paying a lot of executives a lot of money that aren't even here working. You know, Alex Cora's not here. And they're still paying him. I think there's a part of they just. You know, you fire him, and then who's the next guy going to look like and sound like? Especially with the potential lockout.
He's somebody
next
year. That, I mean, that Dave Dombrowski came in and made deals that put you in a World Series, and you won it.
I don't know who the next Dave Dombrowski is out there. Maybe they know. But they don't align themselves with guys like that because Dave Dombrowski's don't think like John Henry.
But they did once. I mean, there's a chance they have those old feelings again, you know, and think back to an aggressive guy.
You ever seen John Wick where he takes a guy and holds him in front of him and uses him as a human shield where they just to get riddled in bullets?
Yeah.
Right now, Craig Breslow is the body getting riddled with bullets and John Henry is Keanu Reeves.
And didn't they have a super hard time even hiring Craig? Wasn't he like the 12th guy to apply for the job?
Yeah. But he right now has somebody that the fan base is getting pissed at instead of John Henry. And the minute you get rid of Craig Breslow, that opens it up.
It's the next guy.
Right. But right now, it's a direct shot to Craig Breslow. And you move him out of the way, and now all of a sudden, everyone's talking about John Henry because he's him and Sam Kennedy, the last two left. So I have a feeling that they've already made their decision. They're going to move on from him, but they are now going to wait until the season is over because he is the perfect human shield.
That's dumb. They should, if they're going to make a change, they should do it before the trade deadline.
They're not going to let him. They're not going to let him trade anybody. They're not going to let him do anything.
But then you're,
this team
they're
sucks.
Not, they're not going to let a new guy come in and to make a trade.
Why?
Either.
Why?
Because did you hear that? What do you think they just said? Sam Kennedy. I actually believe him.
But this, you're trusting an owner to make the. This is like Jerry Jones making the decisions for the Dallas Cowboys. That's what you're saying they're going to do.
Yeah.
And they're going to fire Breslow, and it's John Henry's going to make the call. Ownership.
John Henry's going to make the call because it's going to be such a big name, big bat that the owner has to be involved in that decision.
Well, no, but in this case, you're trading away parts. You're trading away Chapman. You're trading away Garrett Whitlock or Slayton or whoever it is, and you need intimate knowledge of farm systems and prospects and AAA guys.
Yeah, I'm sure there's guys there that aren't under Breslow that know all that stuff, that have that information.
They fired half the staff. I mean, who's left? I mean, they have guys from single A that are managing in AAA.
I just don't know how you bring somebody in at this point that's going to have instant knowledge of all these guys right away to make a big deal. He's only been here for a cup of coffee.
Well, speaking of big deals, remember how we had a Buster Olney on with us earlier in the week, and a little news was made because he said that ownership had jumped ahead, like basically got in front of, taken over for the role of GM, and they were the ones picking up the phone and trying to call to get anybody, like a big bat here. Well, Sam Kennedy was asked about that report. Let's hear what he had to say about that.
Well, Buster, I've known Buster for 30 years, but that probably, I'm guessing, I don't know, that probably grew out of the fact that that myself and John and Tom were at Major League Baseball meetings with 29 other owners for three straight days last week. And there were lots of conversations about ways that our various clubs could improve. Some commiserating and conversations about needs, but no one's trying to play general manager on TV here. I mean, sometimes those conversations at our level, at the ownership level, can be passed along to our baseball ops departments and lead to a transaction. So, yeah, there's discussions going on with other clubs, with other owners about, you know, needs that we'd have. You haven't seen a lot of transactions or moves. They are hard to pull off this time of year, just given where everybody is. But I assume that's where those reports came from. And we've got constant communication with Craig in terms of keeping him updated if there's anything that's actionable or needs to be followed up on. So I assume that's what that was.
I see that being plausible, though. No?
He's saying it's true, right?
Yeah, but not going behind his back, just kind of a casual. All the owners are sitting there talking to each other, just a casual kind of bring, hey, you know, what about this guy? What about that guy? You know, so I could see that happening at those events. So I kind of understand his point.
But it would be like Robert Kraft talking to Elliot Wolf and saying, you know, Elliot, I really want you to pick up the phone. I'm gonna call the Jets for you. I think we want their corner or something. You know, it's weird. It's not normal.
Yeah, I mean, but he's not picking up the phone. He's sitting next to the guy at the pool, and you know, all of a sudden we start talking about their teams, and then the subject of players come up. I mean,
let's go to Tim in Hanover, line four. What's up, Tim? How's it going?
Guys, love talking to you every day, man. You know what? You boys got to listen to the front office, man. You got to think just like them. These guys are so cagey. They're paying nothing right now for all these guys. If you look at it, look at the holdout for possibly for next year. They're not paying nothing, right? And then they ain't putting in no investments in anything. So they're basically, and then I hope they can get what they need when it all does come together after next year, if there is a holdout. Otherwise, we're screwed. We're going back to square one, and it'll be a joke.
Yeah, Tim, you know, I think they've written off this season, and I believe that they truly want to make some huge moves in the offseason. I think maybe that's why the owners are getting involved, that Buster Olney report.
Yeah, they won't have nothing, though, if they have.
Oh, you didn't. Sorry. Cut him off right
that
there.
That was my bad. Sorry.
No, that's all right. Sorry. Thank you, Tim, for calling. But I think that they've officially written the season off. They know there's no way to get back.
And do you think Crochet is, like, shutting himself down? That's what we heard yesterday, is him saying, hey, it's a lot worse than we thought.
I mean, listen, yeah, why that's rush back? Like. Yeah, why rush back? This season's it's over.
Also, something to monitor there, Crochet's contract. So he had initially a shoulder injury. He has a clause in the contract where if he spends 120 days on the injured list for an arm injury between this year and 2023, his opt-out, his player opt-out in 2030 is voided. And then the team gets a cheaper option in 2032. So now it's morphed from a shoulder injury to a lat injury. All of a sudden, somehow, without doing much, I mean, I don't know what's going on there, but it is just something curious to watch.
Well, just that part of his body is the stipulation?
Just the left arm. Interesting. It's the left arm only. So now it's a lat? Like, that's kind of odd, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, you can understand, like, I can see throwing, and I can see hurting your lat when you throw.
So you think it's something connected there?
But that's an interesting piece to the story I didn't know about, that clause is in his contract.
It's just another weird thing hovering over this season.
Do you think when you hear what's going on and the way that other teams are perceiving the Red Sox, that this is going to make free agents want to come here?
No.
I mean, that's the thing, is that, I mean,
not at all.
So bad right now. I mean, there are some players that will just take the most amount of money, but I just don't think that, with all else being equal, there's other teams that are going to pay as much as the Red Sox do.
Well, I think that's part of the issue. They've tried to get guys here cheaper for the Fenway factor, right? Like, you can play.
That doesn't exist anymore.
You're not going to the Trop. You're not playing in front of 10,000 people. You're going to have a sold-out place every time you come here. But it's now, you're right, counterbalanced by the venom of said fans because we've been so bad.
All right. Boston Bar guy on line three, now you're talking. Let's hear what you got to say.
Nope.
I mean, boys, I just been listening for like a half an hour or so. I just got my car a little while ago, and I'm listening to you guys. And I love you guys. You guys are great. You know, really good. Especially Teddy J. And I'm saying to myself, why are these guys talking about the Red Sox? Who cares about the Red Sox? We're done with the Red Sox. What happened last night is legendary.
Yes, legendary.
And guys, listen to this one. So I'm watching the game with my wife. Right, and I doze off. And I know it's like they're up to 29 halftime, whatever, in the third quarter. She wakes me up and says, they're only up by 7. I'm like, what? and I watch, Teddy J, if you and I had a 29, give us 20 points up in the fourth quarter, you and I could coach those guys to victory.
That's it, bud.
There's no doubt in my mind. Their coach totally gagged, without a doubt. They're going down and they're taking jump shots and only, you know, using 6 seconds of the play clock. Mm-hmm. They should be going down and using at least, you know, 17, 18 seconds of the play clock. I couldn't believe what was going on. And then at the end, and I don't want to throw this guy into the bus that much, but the dude that stole the ball, and all he's got to do is pull a Bob Cousy and run around with the ball.
Listen,
he decides to try to go in.
Boston Bar guy, there's nothing I would like more than to right now pivot to one of the most insane sporting events that I have ever watched in my life. And I'm excited. I'm pissed off. There's so many different emotions that go around that game last night. I mean, I wanted the Spurs to win, but my God, that's one of those games that you can say, if you stayed up and watched the entire thing, you've never seen a game like that before.
Couldn't believe it.
That's right. All right, but
well, the bar guy's up till 3 a.m. now. The bars are open.
That's right, with the old World Cup thing. Let's get to it, because there's a lot to unpack in that game, including some of the best damning commentary I have heard from Mr. Charles Barkley. And there's something about last night's game that is truly, like, really making me angry about the fans. Not, I'm not talking about the ones in the streets. I'm talking about the ones that were courtside. There is one person that is just, for some reason, has got me all twisted up. And we must talk about this, and we'll have a therapeutic session together right after this.
Brunson gets it, fires up a three. Shot no good. The tip, it's gone! It's gone! It's gone! With 1.2 remaining, Knicks take the lead!
Well, I've never seen anything like that before in the NBA. That was absolutely unbelievable.
It's never happened.
And I hated it. I wanted the Spurs to win. I was feeling great. But you got to recognize when you're seeing something truly special, and that was effing insane. It's 93.7 WEEI, 617-779-7937. Rich, Ken, three-time Super Bowl champion Ted Johnson. And before last night, the biggest comeback in finals history was one that I know all of us remember, and that was the 24-point comeback in the 2008 finals with the Lakers. That's the one where Eddie House went off and got them back in the game, and they ended up beating the Lakers.
Game four.
It's to this day, that was the best basketball game that I've ever watched. I remember, like, there's no way they're going to do this. There's no way they're going to pull this off. And they mentioned it last night. And then what do we see? We saw a team that could not miss from three during that first half in the San Antonio Spurs. They were, 71% from three? Utterly ridiculous. They were in the top six or seven highest scoring first halves for an NBA Finals team. The Spurs looked unbeatable, up by 29 points. And then I saw what could have been the worst coached, dumbest fourth quarter ever played by a team in my life. This is not taking anything away from the Knicks, because the Knicks do what the Knicks did, and that is in the fourth quarter. Jalen Brunson went off. Big shots, big blocks by OG Anunoby, but I have to be honest. Some of the stuff that they did, it was inexcusable at the end of that game who's that? De'Aaron Fox. Mm-hmm. De'Aaron Fox gets the ball. Dribble it out! Dribble it out! That's all you have to do! You went up for a layup and ruined it for everybody. This team has made two of the dumbest moves that I've ever seen a basketball team do, not just in the finals, between game two, where Wemby throws the ball to his teammate's back, to not dribbling it out. How did you not know you're supposed to do that? And this is their youth, I was hoping that this wouldn't creep up on them, but they are the only team in NBA Finals history that has all five starters on rookie contracts. And when you see Castle out there just dominating, you realize that he's like 22. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's basically a kid out there. But that doesn't stop the fact that that was just an all-time comeback, an all-time collapse, just an awesome, awesome thing to witness. But man, I mean, there's a lot of people talking about what was the bigger comeback? Was it this, or was it the 28-3 from your New England Patriots?
Right,
and I got to be honest, it's 1A, 1B. I don't know how you can choose.
Well, this is the greatest comeback in basketball history, NBA history, right? I mean, given the stakes,
NBA history, but
even forget that. Just if you factor in the stage that it's on,
sure.
To do this in this game, which I declared was winner of this game wins the series. Mm-hmm. Kirk agreed with me, and I obviously now feel that's the case. So this was basically a Super Bowl for the NBA. And the only thing, though, Ted, is that I guess the OG tip would have to be compared to, like, the Edelman catch, which is probably in that vicinity of greatness.
Oh, here's Edelman broken up, and the pass is no sign yet. Edelman comes down with a football, and they're saying it's a catch.
There were so many great plays, but obviously that stands out. That's the OG Anunoby play.
Yeah, no, that play will – everyone's going to remember the tip-in from OG. For them to the Knicks to come back and win, there had to be things that the Spurs did that were dumb too, right?
So
same with the Falcons. Falcons didn't run the ball. Are you kidding me? Like, you have all you had to do was run the football so you could burn some clock. So it was – It was what was kind of disappointing to me was to see how Wimby played at the end. I mean, he was just settling for threes.
Was he tired?
He was gassed. That's the thing. You know, with that lean body, if you put bodies on him and you work him down to the nub, I mean, he's going to be tired at the end of games. And he's just settling for these long three-point shots, which was frustrating. He had a chance. He gets fouled with like 2 minutes left, and the Spurs at the free throw line were 17 of 20 from the free throw line. Two of the three misses were Wimby's with less than 2 minutes to go.
Yep. Right.
He choked, man. Absolutely choked.
So was the OG Anunoby block, the one where De'Aaron Fox went up to go for a layup, was that the Dante Hightower strip sack?
Right.
Yeah, probably so. Yeah, that was so probably right.
And I know that there's a lot of people who are like pissed off that they were comparing this game to 28-3, and I'm telling you,
it's hard to be pissed off at that.
It's 1A, 1B. The only way that the 28-3 is going to go down as a bigger come-from-behind win is if, for some reason, the Spurs end up winning three in a row and they end up winning the championship. That's the only way you could take a look at it and say that it's not as significant and not as improbable. And it sucks because I obviously didn't want that to happen. And it was, but just like the Atlanta Falcons made a bunch of dumb decisions, the Spurs couldn't have played worse basketball. Here's Charles Barkley afterwards and what he had to say.
They had a 25-point lead, took eight straight threes. Like, they thought to get, like, that was some of the most mismanaged, stupid basketball. Hey, when you blow a 29-point lead, the other team has to help you. The San Antonio Spurs helped the New York Knicks win this game by doing some of the stupid-ass stuff I've ever seen on a basketball court.
Okay. So, obviously, that was a kick in the nuts if you were a Spurs fan or if you wanted the Spurs to win, but they did it to themselves. But there was one thing about that game that really, like, really bugged me. And it was Taylor Swift on the side.
I thought you were going to say Wimby trash talking earlier.
No. But whatever. People trash talk. And this isn't a Taylor Swift, you know, she doesn't seem like a basketball fan. That's not it at all. Anyone can go. Listen, I'm not one of these people who got mad when she was at football games. I had no problem with that. But here's what pisses me off. She's sitting there with her big Knicks shirt, whatever it was, like Stevie Nicks, Nickelback, with her friends all dancing around and doing their thing. When 2 weeks ago she was courtside with her fiance Travis Kelce rooting against the Knicks. Mm-hmm. You were both all about the Cavs during that CAD series. So get out of here with your Knicks shirt and with all the people going after the Knicks announcer who said she's not even a Knicks fan. Get her out of here.
Right.
You know what?
She had to apologize.
She's right. 2 weeks ago you were literally courtside rooting against the Knicks. So just whatever. I don't care. You can be a fan of whatever team you want. You can, but you can't literally right before the series before be rooting against the team that you're jumping around wearing a shirt for.
I forgot about that Cavs things, but she has shown out to the Knicks games before.
Oh, boy, she is.
No, she is kind of a fan of the Knicks.
And don't root against them series before.
And she was 100% rooting for the Cavs?
Yeah, she was with Travis Kelce, and they were like he was crushing a beer, and she's like, oh, look at this brute. What are we going to do?
She didn't have a Cavs jersey
on. That's the one thing that pissed me off. As I said, the fact that she was there, I don't care. Listen, you pay your money. I never had a problem with her being in a football game, but just that made me so mad. She was courtside rooting against the Knicks, like the series right before it. It kind of pissed me off.
That's her place. She's getting married there. Come on.
I know. I don't know what kind of just drove me more crazy, that or DJ Khaled looking at his phone the entire game. That was more funny to me.
But you had Kraft too. Kraft was there.
So Kraft lives in New York, right?
Yeah, but I mean, he's sitting in the front row cheering on the Knicks.
That's weird. But you know what? It's weird.
That's rich people stuff.
That is rich people stuff. You know what I mean? But he also wasn't like rooting for the Cavs the week before, rooting against the Knicks the week before.
He distinctly didn't. You could see Kraft didn't root. He didn't cheer. He wasn't applauding.
He was just taking it.
He at least had that kind of
just having a good time, hanging out with his buddy Meek Mill or something like that. I'm sure he had some good friends. I know Jay-Z's one of his buddies, so maybe that's who he went to the game with. All right, 617-779-7937. We will take your calls, and we're not going anywhere. 2 minutes. We'll be right back.